Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Hey, it is Tuesday afternoon, and we had our big MLB The Show draft today, and I got to say, nailed it.
Nailed it. I was shocked at how that thing went.
Yeah. I think
was I the only one of the three of us that put a ton of emphasis on war? I think I was.
I think you were. I was putting emphasis on just counting stats, homers, RBIs, batting average.
Okay, yeah, so we'll see what happens. I just based it all on war, which is how much, you know, because if war incorporates everything.
Yes.
And I got...
But unfortunately for you, it incorporates defense, and I don't know how deep... See, I don't understand MLB The Show rules, so I don't know if defense actually counts for something.
True, but if those... But in the game ratings, so these were converted to game ratings... And again, I'm not an MLB The Show guy, so this very easily could be, you know. But I have three 99s and two 98s. You have a 99.
What do you mean by 99 and 98?
Okay. Your rating from 1 to 100 in MLB The Show tells you how good of a player you are.
Okay.
So
where'd you get the ratings from MLB The Show?
Carlo, because I actually read my email and you don't, Carlo sent an email to everybody with the converted MLB The Show ratings. For example, you took Mike Piazza. He's a 99.
Okay.
Okay. Matt Kemp.
Good first pick.
Matt Kemp, who you got with the 11th pick, is a 98.
Okay.
The biggest steal of the draft, keep in mind we only took 30 people.
Yep.
Was you getting Don Drysdale with the 26th pick, who is a 98. Okay. So you have two 98s and a 99 on your team. Sedano doesn't have any 99s. He has Kershaw, who's a 98. And his next best player is Manny Ramirez, who's a 90. Oh, no. He's got Ron Say, who's a 97. But so if you just base it on MLB The Show ratings, I have three 99s and two 98s. You have a 99, two 98s, and a 97. You and I would be favored to bury Sedano. But I have no idea if that translates into anything.
Yeah, see, I had a strategy which was I'm going to get at least Don Drysdale. It's the I'm at least going to get Don Drysdale strategy.
Where I would argue that was the best pick of the draft. Because I had your strategy, too. I ended up getting the first pick, but I said to myself, if I don't get Koufax, my starting pitcher should be the last pick.
Yeah, you my second to last pick was Don Drysdale.
Yeah, I was surprised, by the way, I'll see if you and I come up on the same name.
Okay.
Best player in the whole draft who didn't get taken.
Huh.
In your opinion.
Best, in other words, best Dodger that wasn't drafted.
Yeah.
At all.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think off the top of my head of who that might have been.
It's a weird one.
Okay.
But Zach Greinke had 1 year where he was basically unhittable. I think he had an ERA of 1.66. I think he went 19-2. He had an unbelievable year. If I didn't get Koufax, the second pitcher on my board was Greinke.
Oh, really?
Because of that 1 year. But he didn't get picked at all because we only all took one starting pitcher. And the reliever is not all that important because I don't know if the reliever's ever coming in.
Don Drysdale's throwing complete games.
Right, same Koufax.
Sorry. I got Don Drysdale to throw a complete game. That's why you got Koufax.
Right. And
It'll be fun. It's on. They're airing it tomorrow night. Everybody wants to watch some sports. It'll air tomorrow night at 9 o'clock Pacific time on ESPN Los Angeles Twitter.
And okay, so
and Twitch.
Who do you think was okay, Jeff? Other than Jeff Shaw, who's never going to get in the game,
right?
Who do you think your lowest rated player was? It's actually a tie. Euros rated player was a 94. Mine was 95. You have two 94s.
I will guess it's either Jeff Kent or Eric Karros.
It's both. You hit it. You nailed it.
Oh, okay.
Kent and Karros both rated at 94. The lowest rated player in the entire draft is Duke Snyder at 92, who Sedano inexplicably took, even though all of his best years were in Fort Clark.
Right. He was terrible once he got to Los Angeles. See, I drafted Karros based on the year he went 298, 32 homers, 105 RBIs. It's tough to top that.
Right.
But I thought we were
basing
you're up against great year.
Yeah, you're up against guys who just had, like Matt Kemp, who's on your team, is a 98.
324, 39 homers, 126 RBIs. That was his big year.
Matter of fact,
Karros was 32 homers, 105 RBIs.
Yeah, but like Sean Green's a 97. Sean Green, because of that one monster year he had with the 47 homers.
But I was under the impression I get the monster year, the 297, 49 homers, 125 RBIs.
Yeah, you do.
Because that's the second most homers. Like, he had more than Beltre in that year.
No, he didn't. Beltre has the all-time Dodger record with 48.
I have Beltre with 48 and Sean Green at 49.
I think Sean Green had 47, didn't he? Or did he have 49? I don't know. We're only arguing about two homers. But he didn't hit 300, right?
297.
Yeah, so they can be. I mean, it combines OPS and slugging percentage and all that stuff, too.
Well, here's the thing. All it is probabilities. Now that we're dealing with baseball, all it is probabilities. I mean, it's whether your guys actually perform or don't
perform. And if your pitcher has a good day.
And about whether or not your pitcher, right? If Don Drysdale gets lit up, like that's going to happen. If Don Drysdale gets lit up, then I guess I lose that day. And are we doing it the same way? It's tournament style? It's a three-team round-robin situation?
Yeah, it's just a double elimination tournament. Once you lose two games, you're out. So the way we did the NBA, you just beat everybody. And so you beat me twice, you beat Sedano twice, and the tournament was over.
Right.
I beat Sedano, and then you beat him and knocked him out, and then you beat me twice.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that'd be fun. That's something to do. It's a little sports. It's a little appetizer getting ready for baseball.
My theme of the show today
is
I refuse to get down about all of the negative news that seems
me
to be stockpiling.
Too.
I refuse. For example, the baseball players union saying, we will never accept a salary cap. And everybody just going, what? I actually think that sooner or later, the baseball owners and the baseball players union are going to realize
absolutely
that we are in extraordinary conditions, and it is a bad look for both sides to argue about what percentage of the pie you get.
Yes.
And I think the way you resolve it is you just say, look, and I think both sides should just commit to this. Whatever we decide to do to get through this season, this 180-game pandemic season.
No precedent.
No precedent. You cannot use it in future arguments. You cannot argue that it was a starting point, that you have to come to the table in good faith and say, look, we're going to make a bunch of money. Because of these local TV contracts, let's figure out a way to split it up and both sides quit arguing in the media and publicly and using phrases like salary cap. Let's just figure out a reasonable way to split the pie and come to an agreement that having baseball back is a huge uplifting thing for the country. And we're going to check our egos at the door and relax with all this rhetoric. That's how it's going to end.
Don't you generally think that's what's going to happen?
I do. Not only generally, I 100% believe it. I think Tony Clark and anybody else who's arguing about we will never accept a cap, baseball, like I heard Clark say this today. The owners have tried strategies like this before, and they know how this will end. Nobody's tried anything like this before because we've
never been in this situation. Seen this before.
Right. And everybody has to come to that realization. Again, like the NBA players, according to Woj, according to ESPN, the NBA union representatives sent out texts today to all the NBA players saying, hey, we're trying to get a head count here. This survey will your name and your vote will remain anonymous. Do you want to play or not? And can I just say, I know I work for the Lakers, so I'm not supposed to comment about players on other teams, so I'm just going to say it. I love Ja Morant. Just love him. Love the way he competes. Love his attitude. Love the fact that he's happy to be in Memphis. And Ja Morant tweeted out right away, "I want to play." That's what we need, man.
Well,
we
you
need
saw
guys
the.
To just say,
did you hear about the Yahoo report that LeBron,
yes, Chris Haynes,
CP3, good. Damian Lillard, Giannis, Russell Westbrook, KD, Kawhi Leonard, Steph Curry, private conference call on Monday established a united front in favor of resuming the season. Thank
and you know,
God.
You know who comes off the best in that group, in that super friends group?
Steph.
Yep, because his team is out of it. They really have no reason to want to come back and play. And what Steph is saying is, this is bigger than us. This is
He's
bigger than the
matters.
Fact that we are basically eliminated. We can make a lot of money. We can put a lot of people back to work. We can give the country a big kind of punch in the arm and say, hey, here's something to do and here's something to watch. And Mace, I believe that all these wheels will end up on the same spot.
Yep.
That is, we're going to compromise and we're going to play.
Yep. And we're going to figure out the science of it, and we're going to figure out the data of it, and we're going to talk to the experts, and we're going to figure out a way to make this work. I think that's what's going
to
happen.
And that's just as easy of a conclusion to come to as it is shut it all down. You know, the Bill Plaschke, Charles
Bill
Barkley,
Plaschke.
Shaquille O'Neal, shut it all down.
Who was the latest shut it all down guy? It was T-Mac and George Karl both said shut it all down. It's like, yeah, it's easy to say shut it all down when you're not in it.
It's actually the easiest thing to do.
Yeah.
The easiest thing to do is shut it all down. It is. But since when did this country get ahead or get founded on easy? You know, The harder road sometimes produces a greater result, and I'm proud of all these NBA super
yes.
friends that got together today and said, "I know what the obstacles are. I want to play." I'm proud of the people that you know. And every time somebody says like California today, there was a report in the LA Times: our stay at home order may get extended through the end of the summer. If it does, let's find a way to work around it.
Yep.
If the Dodgers have to go to Arizona, they have to go to Arizona. If we need to reopen with smaller groups in smaller numbers of people, I read an order today that Disneyland and Disney World may reopen with minimal capacity. If that's the way we got to do it, I'm in favor of people looking for solutions. All right? It's not going to be flawless. We're going to hit some bumps in the road. But the easiest thing in the world is shut it all down.
Right.
And I just don't think that's where we're going to end up. I think people are going to try and make life happen again. And I'm proud of the people that are trying to do that.
Absolutely. So let you know that coming up on the show today, first of all, next hour we've got Max Muncy from the Dodgers and Ramona Shelburne, Momo, will be with us. And, of course, 5 o'clock fast track at the bottom of the hour. Now, the murder hornet is an item of fascination for me, this idea that there's this hornet, this crazy hornet, the size of a bird that is flying around
it's
somewhere.
It's not the size of a bird.
It's the size of a seagull.
It's the size of a seagull. You'd be lucky to get to hummingbird, but that, you know, don't let that get in the way of a good story.
But
it is not the size of a bird.
Because it's been discussed all over the place, we thought this is a perfect time to have a conversation with Keith Delaplane, who is an entomologist who specializes in bees. So we'll get the full...
Well, you know, the murder hornet is just... It goes in and rips the head off the bees and takes all the larvae and just leaves. It could be a movie. I mean, the murder hornet just destroys bees.
Yes. So we will get Keith Delaplane in here at the bottom of the hour. Mason in Ireland, lots of ways to reach us. 877-710-ESPN phone lines. You can use our voicemail, which is 530-ESPN-710. You can also use hashtag Ask Mason and Ireland on Twitter. And you can email me direct, venicemace@gmail.com. Mason in Ireland, 710-ESPN. Hey, 710 ESPN, Mason in Ireland, just got this into the email. Let's see, should have gone for Johnny Roseboro at catcher. No.
I looked him up. He was at Russell Martin had 1 month. Well, you got Piazza, so yours was a no-brainer.
Yeah, I got Piazza. He was my
the
first
greatest
draft
catcher.
Pick.
If you want to make the argument that Sedano should have taken Roseboro ahead of Mike Socha, you can. But Socha is a 95 in MLB The Show, which is
boy,
really
listen to you with the lingo
for a catcher.
I seriously don't think I got that email from Carlo.
I'm looking at it. It's to you, Sedano. As a matter of fact, they sent it to two different Steve Mason email addresses.
Did they? I'm looking at all my
Bergman's
emails from
on
Carlo.
It came at 12:48 today. You're
12:48 today is after the draft.
What is wrong with you? Are you stoned?
No. 12:48 is after the draft.
What time did we do the draft?
We did it at 11:55 or 11:15.
Right. And when is 12:48?
But you were telling me that you thought you had these rankings before the draft started.
No. I only paid attention to WAR.
Okay.
These are MLB The Show rankings.
See, I was under the impression that you somehow had access to these numbers before the draft actually took place.
I've never played MLB The Show in my life.
Okay, got it. All right. I must have missed an email. I never got a bunch of numbers for these players.
No, you
now
had
I see
it was after the draft, and you have to set your lineup. I already turned mine in.
Well, isn't your lineup just your lineup?
No. What's your batting order?
Oh, the batting order. Yeah, Maury Wills leading off.
Yeah, you should. Okay, so I'll predict yours. You're going to have Maury Wills leading off. I don't think you're going to want to stick one of your 94s in that. So you're going to have Tommy Davis bat second.
Yeah, Tommy Davis.
You'll have Piazza bat third. Sean Green fourth. Sheffield fifth.
Where'd you put Piazza?
You put Piazza third.
Oh, third, yeah.
Sean Green fourth.
Yep.
Sheffield fifth.
Yeah, that I like that.
Kent sixth. Karras again doesn't matter. One hit six, one hit
yeah,
seven.
Yeah, one hit six, one hit seven.
And then who have we not put? Oh, do we put Kemp in?
Oh, and then the hitter. Hitter pitches or pitcher hits.
Yeah, but I thought I only got to seven. I don't think we put Kemp in. I think you have Maury Wills lead off. Yeah, I forgot Kemp. So you have Maury Wills lead off, and then you got to decide who bats second. Could you bat Kemp second? He's fast. Or do you want him third?
He's probably a decent two hitter. I bet you he hit two.
Yeah, then put him two. Put Piazza three. Put Sean Green four. And then Sheffield fifth, and you're laughing.
Yeah. No, I think
Tommy Davis
pretty solid line. I think Sedano's the one. He's got the noticeably weaker.
Well, and plus he's got Kershaw has notoriously in big games could go either way.
In big games, you can't count on Kershaw. Exactly right.
But remember, you look like the worst team in the Laker draft, and you won the whole thing easily.
Totally
so,
true.
So Sedano could pull one of those.
Yeah, I think anybody who might have played MLB The Show before would probably have an advantage over everybody else, but none of us have ever played, so who knows? Who knows?
Oh, and by the way, but we're getting ready to do this draft this morning, and we go onto the radio, and Jeff Passan is on Sedano's show.
Yep.
And you just, I wish, you know, I kind of wish, like, that I had a little more of what you have in this. I can't hold grudges. I really don't.
I'm like Michael Jordan. I hold every little grudge, every little slight I hold.
Right. And so Jeff Passan will never be on the show, will he?
You know what, boys? Can I call you back? I actually have to grab this.
Yeah. That call will never be accepted. Because, Lindsay, didn't you ask him to come on the show today or tomorrow? Or today or yesterday?
Yes, yesterday I said, you want to reschedule from Friday? And he said, sorry, this week is bat bleep crazy for me, so reach out to me Thursday or Friday.
Yeah, and apparently I didn't know this. Then I found out today that you smoke cigarettes, which I had completely, I had no clue that was even in your repertoire.
No, I just
and
I tried.
Bergman,
I've tried them.
Okay, so Bergman is the fact that you admit it puts you a step over Bergman.
Yeah.
Bergman gets like defensive if you say. That he smoked cigarettes. I've played golf with Bergman, and all he did was smoke cigarettes, and he swore to me, because that's the only time I do it.
The only time I smoke.
And then you said, Oh, no,
hey,
no.
Who smokes cigarettes? That's gross.
It Mason is really old school.
Oh, Lindsay, the answer is Mason and Bergman. Both of them. And neither one of them, like, well, Mason didn't really care, just kind of slept out, oh, matter of fact. But Bergman's just a complete liar about it. I think Bergman is a chain smoker.
I don't know if he's a chain smoker, but he may smoke more than we think.
Yeah. So I found out all sorts of things.
It's pretty old school. Yeah, no, I mean, that just irritates me that I've never had a guest bail after 2 minutes and then say, what'd he say again, Funch?
You know what, boys? Can I call you back? I actually have to grab this.
And then never call back. And then at one point, wasn't he confirmed for Monday at one point, Lindsay?
He said on Friday, I said, so since you weren't able to call us back, you want to reschedule for Monday? And he said, yeah, sure, of course. I apologize. Sorry about that. And I said, no worries. You're doing your job. Breaking news. I get it. And then so I just assumed, you know, Monday when he said he could reschedule, I figured we could just work out a time. And when I texted him at like 10:30 in the morning, it was just nope.
Nope.
He literally said nope.
Nope.
He said, sorry that this week is just bat bleep crazy for me.
So we are a Bob Nightingale show. Bob takes our calls. Bob's a friend of ours. Bob will be there for us when we need him most.
Hey, Steve. Hey, Don. You know, I didn't know there is a Bob Nightingale Jr.
And oh, he
is
really?
And he is a beat writer for the Cincinnati Reds. Did you know that?
No clue.
Yeah, I just found that out the other day.
They're related?
Yeah, he's Bob Nightingale Jr. I mean, I guess they could be coincidental.
This would be a very, very outrageous coincidence.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but, yeah, so he's banned, McShay's banned, but you're banned.
Well, McShay, McShay stiffed us like three times.
Well, right. I don't know about the past, but I think with this past McShay situation, we found out like a week later that he had coronavirus. So maybe it was like he was.
Oh, you know what? That's
us.
True. That's true.
He wasn't feeling good that day because it was like a week or two later that it came out that he had it.
Say,
so maybe he just wasn't feeling good.
I say we're a Mel Kiper show.
We're Mel. Yeah,
yep.
We're a Mel Kiper
show.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Sometimes you get over these things. Like Windhorse was banned at one point.
Yeah, Windhorse was banned, and then he got incredibly famous.
How could
and I
you
said,
ban
oh, we've
him?
Got to have time for Windhorse.
He'd same reason. He stiffed us a couple times.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. Dave McMenamin, there was that stretch. Remember Dave McMenamin?
Yeah, but we cut him a break because you and I are both close with our moms. And the last time McMenamin blew us off, he was at dinner with his mom, so he
true.
Didn't. He forgot to answer his phone.
So we cut him some slack there. Yeah, I mean these little slights. It's like who's the guy? Michael Funchess, the guy who played for the Wizards, who LeBradford Smith. He said as he was walking off the floor, "Nice game, Mike." Never happened, but Michael Jordan somehow created like an unbelievable performance in Chicago against LeBradford Smith based on a totally made-up story because LeBradford Smith never did walk off the floor saying, "Nice game, Mike." That's sort of how I roll. Every little slight sticks with me, and it makes me angry, and it drives me, John. It drives me.
Yeah, you end up forgiving a lot of these people, but I wish I could hold grudges. I learned at a young age, though, if you hold grudges, then you waste all this mental space on hating somebody, and it just
oh, here you are getting all philosophical on us.
No. I only have so much headspace, so I just get dismissive of them, but I don't like hold the grudge. Like I go, okay, you know, I can live life without Jeff Passan. But I don't reserve any type of grudge. You're going to have a grudge against that dude.
Yeah, Jeff Passan is dead to me. He's dead to me. That one really is dead to me. By the way, I got an email from Gil. MLB The Show values defense a whole lot in
a
player's rating and gameplay. For example, a player with excellent offensive ability like Justin Turner is rated lower than a defensive stud like Matt Chapman.
What's interesting is...
drafted a true center fielder. Oh, no, I drafted a true center fielder.
I have Willie Davis. He was like an all gold glove center fielder. But the what's interesting about that is that's why Mike Socha is a 95, because he's a really good defensive catcher.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So that counts for something. All right. Coming up next, again, the social media phenomenon known as the murder hornet. I tend to think we are all safe from the murder hornet, but we will find out next with bee expert Keith Delaplane, or Delaplane, one way or the other.
It could just be Delaplane.
Or it could be Delaplane.
But I love your first two pronunciations. Which, give me those again.
Delaplane.
Yeah.
Or Delaplane.
Is it? No.
Like you're trying to make it French.
The first
or
one you tried to make French.
Delaplane.
Oh, yeah. And then the second one, you're Delaplane.
Delaplane.
And Lindsay, isn't it just Delaplane?
I think so. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, Delaplane.
You took a long, circuitous route on that one, man.
That's coming up next for you, Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, as I previously announced, our next guest is French.
That was a complete butchering of. We welcome Keith Delaplane to the show. Keith, how are you?
Hello, I'm doing fine. You,
Keith? Yeah, Keith, I thought your name was pronounced Keith Delaplane. Is that? Is that incorrect?
Way too hard.
Yeah, that's right. And then he said Delaplane, and I said, "Are you sure it's not just Delaplane?" And he goes, "Oh yeah."
We've been indoors a long time here, Keith. A long time.
Well, we all have, haven't we?
Yeah. All right. So we are fascinated by these murder hornets. Now, first of all, right. let dispel or settle an argument. Mason claims that the murder hornets are as big as a bird, which I think is a gross over-exaggeration. How big can a murder hornet get?
Well, I tell you, if there are birds as big as 2 inches, then he may be right.
That's
so
like
kind of like a hummingbird.
Keith.
Yeah, hummingbird.
That's big, man. And where are these things?
Yeah.
Where are these things right now?
Well, fortunately, at this moment, they are restricted to the extreme northwest corner of Washington State. So you guys are pretty good shape. We're in really good shape in Georgia. But it probably is just a matter of time till they spread who knows how widely.
Keith, how did they get here?
Million-dollar question. We don't know. Just human transport. It's pervasive. It's everywhere. Everything is flying everywhere. So it's just a matter of time till I think 100 years from now, planet Earth's going to be one big tossed salad.
Wow, that's a really optimistic way.
And
to look
Mace,
at
we
it.
Should point out that Keith is a doctor. He's a professor of entomology and honeybee program director at the University of Georgia. So you're Keith. I would think you would take it as a compliment if I referred to you as an advanced beekeeper, right? A beekeeping expert.
Well, yeah, I'll own it. Somebody has to be that, so I'll say yes.
And these things are really bad for honeybees, right?
Yes, they are. I think for the average person, you know, you and me and just normal Americans, I think this is going to be a non-issue. But I think any of your listeners who are beekeepers, I mean, for them, it could be a serious deal. These hornets are really bad predators of bee honeybees in Europe and in Asia. And so we're kind of keeping our eyes open to see what's going to happen here.
Keith, for people who don't know, if that were to happen, if they were to decimate the bee population, how does that affect everyday life in the United States, if that were to happen?
Well, it boils down to one word, and that's pollination. And when it comes to bees, it's all about the food crops that they pollinate that define the quality of life that we enjoy in America. I always think of bee-pollinated crops are the things that we eat out of pleasure as opposed to the things that we eat for survival. I mean, if you want to just stay alive, you know, you could stay alive with barley and rice. But you know, if you want anything better than that, you start looking at bee-pollinated crops really quickly. You know, it's dairy products, it's fruits and vegetables that make our diets pleasurable. And that's what we're talking about. That's what's at stake.
So I see you actually, you know, I'm big when it comes to honors and awards. You actually have won the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire. That sounds like a gigantic award, Keith, is it?
Well, yeah, it is. I take it. You know, the British are really great when it comes to spectacular titles, and that makes it all the better. People ask me if they have to call me Sir Keith, and I say no, because I'm an American citizen, I can't be a knight, but you can call me a squire.
Squire. I would love to be a squire. Nobody ever calls me that. Now, you have a moral dilemma, Keith, as far as I can tell. You spent some time, I guess you did your undergraduate work at Purdue, but you spent a lot of time at LSU, and now you're at Georgia. So when LSU plays Georgia in a big football game, who are you rooting for?
It's a rough day. That is a bad morning to wake up. I mean, who am I going to root for? I really got an edge for the Tigers, though. Go Tigers.
Really? Yeah. Even though you work at Georgia, good for you. That's an honest guy.
Yeah.
all right, so what are we doing anything as a country, as a government, to keep these Hornets out, or are we just hoping they never show up?
Right now, it is being handled by the state, and Washington State Department of Agriculture has done a really good job of getting the information out for the rest of us, and we have been sort of following their lead as far as even identifying these insects. I mean, these insects are from Asia, so most entomologists like me, you know, we don't see these guys regularly. So Washington State has been doing a really good job getting the word out to the rest of the states to be on the lookout for these hornets. So I really commend them for their good work.
If one stings you, what happens?
Okay, the sting, the venom is not necessarily deadly. It's a matter of dose. You got a bigger insect here, so you're going to get a bigger dose of venom. But it's not qualitatively any more toxic than any other sting that we receive from bees or hornets now. But it's just a matter of dose. If you get 10 or so stings, these guys are probably not life-threatening, but if you get up to 100 or more, it could be a toxic reaction that could be life-threatening. So if in doubt, you'd want to get to an emergency room and make sure that they take the appropriate treatment for anaphylactic shock.
And, Keith, they just don't kill the bees, right? It's pretty graphic. They explain what happens when a murder hornet gets to a beehive.
Yeah, it's, I think in one word, it's butchery. These hornets will go to a beehive, and they start out as just kind of one pioneer. We'll go out and check out this beehive, and in Europe, they call them bee hawks, because they will snatch the bees right out of the air. And then they will fly with that bee up to a limb, they will decapitate it, and then they will cut off its abdomen, and then they will cut off its legs, they'll cut off its wings, and all they're left with is that little round thorax, which is really heavy in flight and leg muscle, and that's what they fly back to their nest and feed their young. And that actually is an important diagnostic sign for a beekeeper. If they see a big pile of bee parts outside their hive, they're probably looking at a hornet job.
Yeah. Keith, how do they do that? Do they have, like, for lack of a better word, claws? How do they cut all that bee up?
Yeah, they have six of them. They have six legs and very dexterous mouth parts, and they can totally butcher a bee within seconds. It's really something to watch. There's YouTubes out there about it, and it's quite impressive.
Well, listen, it sounds like we're safe for now. It sounds like there's no imminent invasion, which is good. But we wanted to get some, we've heard about them in the news. We've seen all kinds of stories about them. So we wanted to get the scoop on murder hornets, and you've helped us do that. Thank you very much, Keith. We appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking.
Thank you, all Keith. Right. Most Excellent Order of the British Empire. We would never
get
that. That
sounds huge, huge.
All we've ever won is a Bob Miller Award.
Did you see the text from Chris Morales?
Yeah, I did. I hope he follows through on it.
For any of our listeners that are beekeepers.
Yeah, if I know
we
Chris.
We own that beekeeping demo.
Hey, if I know Chris, that's in the open tomorrow. I'll be disappointed if it's not.
right. Coming up for you at 4 o'clock, Max Muncy is going to join us. And then Momo's coming up after that. We'll do some voicemails coming up next at 530-ESPN-710. Also, you can email VeniceMace@gmail.com. And you can use hashtag AskMasonInIreland. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. Hi, Mason in Ireland, what is up? It is, let's see, Tuesday. I honestly had to check to make sure it's still Tuesday. Mad Max Muncy will join us at the top of the hour. By the way, piece of breaking news, Major League Sports can resume after May the 15th in Arizona. That is a huge announcement because that means this idea of spring training in the month of June, spring training 2.0 can take place now in Arizona. That would include the Dodgers.
And we'll talk to Max Muncy about that in about 15 minutes. But that's, and keep in mind, Mace, that the Dodgers may need to play there, depending on the situation in Los Angeles, when, you know, if and when they're ready to resume regular season games. Now, ideally, the Dodgers could play at Dodger Stadium, but if they can't get the medical green light, the backup plan, according to Major League Baseball, is to go to your spring training home and play from there. And remember, this is critical. At its heart, at its core, professional sports is a TV show.
Yep.
That's all it is. It's an entertainment vehicle. The main reason we are so hopeful and are pressuring sports to come back is so we can get the Dodgers on TV every night.
Yep.
And here's the thing. There's no fans anyway. Even if the games were at Dodger Stadium, there would be no fans. So if they bring us baseball every night from Arizona with the Dodgers as the home team, what do I care? I mean, I know it's more inconvenient for the players, and it's unfortunate that they'll have to go down there, but it gives us the entertainment, which brings in the revenue, which is why we're doing this.
Right, exactly, exactly. And I think that sports, and we've talked about this, but sports has led us through some great tragedies and out of some really dark times over the years. And this will go down as one of the darkest times of our lives. This is the time the world literally came to a halt. And sports can be a huge part of helping us to restart our lives, helping us to guide ourselves out of this period as we begin to come back to normal life. And it's going to take a little bit of time, and it might take a little bit more here in Los Angeles than it does in Arizona. But in Arizona, that means that the Dodgers can conceivably move forward with spring training anytime after May the 15th, that's when professional sports teams and teams in general will be able to begin training.
And the Angels, can play in Arizona, but Orange County, I think, has been a little more loose on restrictions. So I my guess is they'll be able to play in Anaheim. By the way, you just said sports has led us out of a lot of troubling times in America. I watched a great quarantine movie last night that I hadn't seen in several years.
Uh-oh, which one?
It's based on a true story. It is incredibly well done. I think it's one of the most underrated sports movies of all time. You've seen Cinderella Man, right?
Oh, sure,
About James Braddock, the boxer.
Yeah, Russell Crowe, one of his great
Who was a victim of the Depression,
yep.
And he had no money, and he had to send his kids away because he couldn't support them. And he was basically working down on the docks, and he was a boxer, and he wasn't a very good boxer because he was fighting with a broken hand, and so he had a bunch of fights that didn't go well. He didn't want to mess up his hand anymore, so he had a couple of fights where he didn't punch people, and he got a bad reputation, and then he worked through it and worked his way up to beat Max Baer and win the heavyweight championship of the world.
Yep.
Mace, this performance by Paul Giamatti as James Braddock's trainer is one of the great sports movie portrayals of all time. I have no idea how he didn't win an Oscar. He got nominated for Best Supporting Actor. The guy who won that year, and this is a movie I haven't seen, my guess is you've seen it so you can tell me, was George Clooney for Syriana, Was Clooney really in Syriana better than Giamatti in Cinderella Man?
Clooney in Syriana was really, really good, but there was also an element of it's Clooney, right? And it was right.
And Giamatti is, by the way, has never been nominated for. He's had some other really good roles.
He was nominated. I think he was nominated for Sideways, wasn't he?
Yeah, I don't think he was.
Fantastic in Sideways. I am not going to drink that Merlot.
Right. And I think Sideways was nominated for some other things. Wasn't that an Alexander Payne movie?
Yeah, Alexander Payne, exactly.
Okay, but I don't think Giamatti got nominated. It is how he doesn't win for you. When you watch it, his reactions as this boxing trainer and the way he trains Braddock and basically gives up his own life to give Braddock a shot at the title. And with Giamatti, the expressions on his face and the way he tries to defend Braddock in public is his performance is spectacular. And so if you're looking for a good quarantine movie, and what made me think of it was when you said sports has led us out of things before.
Yeah.
For Braddock, it led him personally out of the depression, and he does two things in the movie that are really sweet. One is he used to go to unemployment to take out money because he didn't have enough money to live.
Right.
And after he wins one of the fights climbing up the boxing ladder, he walks into the unemployment office and everybody's like, what's he doing here? He's like a famous boxer. I can't believe he's still taking out unemployment. And what he did was he went to pay it back.
Yeah.
He took all the money that he had taken out while he was down on his luck and put it back into the system. It was only $324, but to all the other people, you know, that was really moving. And then I mentioned that he worked on the docks, and it was one of those situations where, you know, 100 guys would show up for work, and it was just luck of the draw if you'd get picked to work that day.
Yep.
And when he became heavyweight champion of the world, he bought all the heavy machinery used on the docks and became the guy who hired the workers. And so that's a good example of what you're talking about, how sports can kind of lift you out of things. And
there's that great scene, by the way, in that movie where Braddock, played by Crowe, goes literally with hat in hand to some fancy meeting or fancy gathering and has to pass the hat to have enough money to get by to feed his family. It's an incredibly moving scene. That's a great movie, directed by Ron Howard.
Yeah, and there's some great small roles for people. And Craig Bierko, who plays Max Baer in this movie.
Yeah,
Bierko was targeted at a young age to have a really big career. He was one of the people that was considered to be on Friends. He was going to be either Schwimmer.
Was he really?
Yeah, Schwimmer, Matt LeBlanc, or Matthew Perry. And it, matter of fact, thought he had it for a minute, and then it, for whatever reason, he passed on it and did something else. And so he plays Max Baer in this movie, and he's fantastic. And who's the guy? Is it Bruce McGill who was?
Yeah, Bruce McGill. He's been in some of our golf tournaments and stuff. Yeah,
yeah. He who plays D-Day in Animal House, and he was in. He's been in a bunch of other movies. He's great in this as the promoter who only cares about making money. Renee Zellweger plays Crow's wife. She's great in it. So if you're looking for a really good quarantine sports movie, track down Cinderella Man. It's old. It came out in 2006, but I hadn't seen it in like 10 years, and it just got me.
You know what I just came across last night? It is the 40th anniversary of Caddyshack.
No way, really?
Yeah, 40 years ago, Caddyshack came out. Has one of the legendary, you want to talk about a criminally overlooked performance. We all, to this day, do impressions of Bill Murray as the greenskeeper in Caddyshack.
Okay.
That was an unbelievable performance.
Interesting story about Bill Murray in Caddyshack. So that was, I think, if not the first, one of the first movies Harold Ramis ever was involved
in. Yes.
And so they got down to this place in Florida where they were filming at this golf course. And it was a golf course that was going away, which is why they were allowed to blow it up at the end. But they realized halfway through the movie, they're filming it, and the two biggest stars in the movie were Chevy Chase and Bill Murray, who had both become famous on Saturday Night Live.
Yep.
Rodney Dangerfield and Ted Knight were kind of the older guys that they brought in, but they were
past. Boy, they were funny.
Yeah, like Ted Knight was past his Mary Tyler Moore days. And
Judge. And,
you know, he plays Judge Smales. So they realized halfway through the movie that Bill Murray and Chevy Chase, the two biggest stars, have no scenes together. So on the fly, they make up that scene where Chevy Chase is golfing and his ball goes into the shed where Bill Murray lives.
Right.
Completely ad-libbed. They walk in, and that's where Bill Murray goes, hey, you know, the best thing about this stuff is you play 36 holes on it during the day and then smoke it at night. It's fantastic. You know, and, you know, pool in a pond would be good for you, you know. That whole scene ad-libbed by Bill Murray, as was the famous
Cinderella
scene,
story.
Yeah. Cinderella boy about to become the Masters champion. It says on the script,
it's in.
Carl takes a weed whacker and starts dreaming about being a great golfer. And Murray just makes that all
it's
up.
It's in the hole.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Genius.
40 years. Jeez.
Yeah. All right, coming up next for you, Mad Max Muncy is going to join us. We got good news just in the last couple of minutes. The state of Arizona is going to allow sporting events, professional sports teams to gather and train starting just later on this week, May the 15th, which means that it is very possible, and I would say now likely, that the Dodgers will be able to have their spring training in June to get ready for a July opening day. Mad Max Muncy will join us next. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.